Hello. Hi. I'm sorry. Hello, everybody. I wasn't quite ready. You are listening to the voice of Vashon on Sweet Vashon Island 101.9. I'm Linda Nygaard, and I'm going to be here with Stirring the Pot, and we hope that you'll pull up a chair and listen. My extraordinarily gifted sidekick, Mr. Tom Conway, is here.
I thought
here.
You were going to say handsome.
Well, that too, but that comes later. This is 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Tom.
Oh, that's true.
Yes. So, hi, everybody. It's been a month again, and now we've had another couple hot days, and we're here for you. So, let's get the show on the road. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Linda. How's it going?
Well, it's going pretty well. Have you been pretty busy?
I have. Between my sloth, I try to integrate it with busy sloth.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sloth, busy, sloth.
So more sloth than
more
busy.
More sloth than busy, for sure.
Yeah. Well, I have found that through this COVID thing, I have been rather slovenly, really. I mean, I keep procrastinating, putting things off. I'll do it later.
It's remarkable. It's remarkable how isolation, I think we're doing a public service by discussing this right off the bat.
The isolation?
Yeah, because people make fun of me when I say, I didn't realize it was so social.
I know. It's really true. But I have a kind of a routine now where I have a friend whose name is Karen, and she and I have coffee in the mornings together in the shade outside under, 6 feet apart. And so I have that little routine. But other than that, I don't really have any routines. I'm just not myself anymore.
No, absolutely, Marigold. I totally get it. I can't even sip iced tea under my magnolias or nothing.
Yeah, but it's been a busy month. What have you been doing?
You know, the one thing I have been doing is trying to keep everything I grow alive. So I've a lot of watering, but my garden is sort of basically where my energy goes these days. Cooking,
I thought it looked great.
Yeah, so I'll do a lot of canning because I have stuff to can, and then I'll pretty much be working in the garden, and basically entertaining my dog.
Well, Buddy has to be entertained.
Buddy,
we do know that
he is master and commander.
Yeah,
I serve at the pleasure of my English bulldog.
You know, I also. When I did the introduction, I forgot to say Susan McCabe is here.
Oh, we love Susan McCabe.
We do love her.
She is an island treasure.
She's a treasure. She's our intrepid engineer for today.
Is that code for old?
No, it's not code for
old. Been around a long time.
No, it's code for savvy, moxie. It's,
yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
You got that.
Impressive.
So, I've been spending some time cooking.
Awesome. So, so what have you been doing? I mean, I sort of, I guess we can't make it all about me.
Actually, that'd be fine.
Yeah. No, I really am interested. I'm not feigning interest. What have you been doing, Linda? No, I really am. I want to really convey that. I am interested in. You know what it is? I think we started off, we were laughing at one of the shows ahead of us, and it just sort of unsettled us.
It unsettled us, and now we don't know what we're talking about.
Because the subject matter was a little surprising. And so,
very surprising.
Begonias.
And not what you're thinking about. Anyway.
So, seriously, we love to start off the show with what have you been doing new this week?
Yeah.
And what, Linda, have you been up to?
Well, I cook for people sometimes, and I have a couple.
They hire you to cook dinner for them or something?
And I cook for an elderly couple on the island, and it's really interesting because the menu changes a lot, but I'm doing 1950s food one day, and the next day I'm doing something different.
Is it the kind where when you look at the cookbooks, it's the brightly colored food from the
50s? No, it's not that bad. We're not doing any aspics, with olives in it and stuff like that. We're not doing that.
But traditional home food.
Traditional home food like stroganoff and that kind of stuff, meatloaf and spaghetti and that kind of stuff. And
sounds
so
good.
I've been doing that, but it's been really hot, so. Now I've been concentrating on salads.
Do you cook it in their house or do you cook it at your home?
No, I do it at my house. And then also I've been looking for lazy recipes.
Ah.
And I found a couple hacks that I think you'll be interested in.
Excellent. Go on.
Well, do you like custard pie?
Oh, God, I love custard
Susan,
pie.
Susan, do you like custard pie? So my friend Margie Bardwell, who now lives in La Jolla, she deserted Vashon.
She didn't go slumming.
Well, no, she didn't. No, she didn't. But anyway, she and I were talking last week, and she said, oh, my God, I made this thing called magic pie. And I said, what's magic pie? She said, you won't believe it. It's blender. So I tried it. And it's not pie, but you put it in a pie plate. So here's what you do. You whip. No, I'm thinking of the ice cream. The pie. You put in a blender, you put a little bit of flour and 4 eggs and some milk and some sugar, and you blend it for 30 seconds, and then you pour it in a buttered pie pan with no crust. And that little bit of flour that's in the mixture sinks to the bottom when it bakes, and it comes out like custard pie. I'm not kidding you.
Is it creamy, or is it like a stiff jello-y thing?
It's in between. It's not it's not like a flan that you cut, kind of, but it's also not like a pudding. It's right. It's not like baked custard in a bain-marie.
Okay.
But it's really, really good.
Then what's the bottom like as the you know how it kind of creates its own crust?
Yeah.
How thick would you think? Like an eighth of an inch?
Like a pie crust thick.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting.
Color me incredulous.
Well, so I got the recipe and I tried it, and it was quite wonderful. And then I was looking too, and there's another recipe just like it, and it's called Impossible Pie. So if you want to make it, just look it up. Magic Pie. Mm. Magic Crust Pie. And then I was home and I didn't have any ice cream, and it was a really hot day and I needed ice cream and I didn't want to go to the store. And I don't have an ice cream maker. So
this is not boding well for you.
I know. So I was just eating ice cubes.
So you looked up a MacGyver website.
Yeah. But I found a recipe where you don't use an ice cream machine.
So did you look? Were you looking specifically for like a hack or how to make ice cream without ice cream, or how to make?
I just said ice cream, no machine recipe.
Oh, excellent.
You know, and then they all came up.
Searches can be very creative.
They can be funny too.
Yeah.
But anyway, this one. Did you make it after we talked about the
You know,
recipe?
I was so, you know, here, my motivation is a friend of mine brought over these chocolate nibs, and she said, oh, I can't eat all these, which of course I look at her with like a dog with a dropped ear.
Yeah.
What? You can't eat them? Okay. That doesn't make no sense. It's like, we'll be here through 2030, yeah. I'm sure. So, yeah. You know, but anyway.
So the answer is no.
The answer is no.
Okay.
Okay. You know,
well, okay, so what you do?
Do you have any Kleenex?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be so.
I'm
dirt.
Very fragile.
Oh yeah. So you whip 2 cups of heavy cream, get the heaviest cream you can get, and whip it to a stiff peak, and then you put a can of sweetened condensed milk.
Oh.
You pour it in the whipped cream. Add a little vanilla.
Okay.
And then whip it again till it turns into stiff peaks, because it will whip to stiff peaks again. Then you put it in an airtight container.
Uh-huh.
You put it in your freezer for 24 hours and voila.
Voila is good?
Oh, it's really good. It doesn't taste like, well, I think you should try it. I don't know how to say.
Yeah.
I've sampled it with several people I know, and they all loved it.
It's light, or was it sort of medium light or heavy? Or
I think it's heavy.
Nice. Did you say somebody, because I think when you were telling me this first time, you said somebody said it tasted like Dairy Queen or.
No, that's when I tasted it at first, because I tasted it after 4 hours.
Oh, it wasn't
and
done.
It tasted like soft serve, which I like. You know, so I thought, oh, well, let's see what happens. And I would highly recommend, if you don't have it and you need some ice cream, make it. It's really, really good.
What's kind of weird about it is when you were telling me about it and I was going to make it, because it was so weird that I had these ingredients.
You had the ingredients, I know.
Well, I wonder if it would work. I get that Trader Joe's shelf-stable cream. It's the best stuff on the planet if you like to have whipped cream in your house.
Oh, and
really? It doesn't need to be refrigerated.
I don't even know that.
Yeah, it's miraculous. And then when you want to use it, you put it in the refrigerator for at least 2 or 3 hours, and it needs to be chilled to whip, and it'll whip.
And it'll whip?
Yeah. But otherwise, you can have like 4 or 5 of these puppies in your pantry, and whenever you need cream, you pull it. And so I had sweetened condensed milk, and I had my newly acquired chocolate nibs.
Well, time is of the essence, and I know you don't have much, so maybe this week you can try it because it's so good. But, you know, speaking of things that we like at the grocery store that we find that we don't know, like I didn't know about shelf-stable cream. We talked last time, I think you talked about, what was it you liked? I can't remember now what you like.
Oh, at the grocery store?
Yeah.
Oh, Old Bay.
Old Bay seasoning. Yeah. Well, there's something that I really love in the grocery store, and that is Better Than Bouillon.
Better Than Bouillon.
It's in a little, have you not ever used it?
I've seen it. It comes in like little jars. Little,
maybe 5 ounce jar or something.
Beef, chicken.
Turkey.
Vegetable.
Yeah. And if you just put a little bit of that in whatever you're making, whether it's soup or stew or gravy or whatever, it's umami, of course, you know, but it's so good. And that's one of my favorite things that you can always have on hand. And really, I cook, like if I'm steaming green beans, I put a little in the water and it flavors it. It's just really, really good.
That sounds really good.
Yeah. Yeah. So, do you have any more grocery store favorites you want to talk
about? You know, I kind of do, but it's, and we were, and you're discussing your hacks.
Yeah.
I have a hack.
What's a hack?
That, see yours.
And where did that word come from?
Like, I don't know. Hopefully it's not, hopefully it's okay.
Yeah.
No, you think? Maybe. Yeah. Could be. Yeah. But you were talking about, your recipes that were hacks. Mine are a little, yours are, a little more refined. Actually, not. Those weren't, that wasn't refined, was it?
That wasn't refined.
Okay, so this is what I used to do in college. I was like the most popular boy on my floor.
Yeah.
Well, at least when it came to the my kitchen. We were in old married student housing, so we had a stove, which was great.
In the dorm?
And there were four of us, and you could not have picked four of the oddest, you know, the most incongruous personalities. And so anyway, we got this thing, and our favorite thing to make, which I was the one that created this fabulous recipe, is you'd go get Poppin' Fresh dough, and you'd have, and we bought a pan like at the thrift shop for like 50 cents, and then you get some good old Wesson oil, and you'd put about, you know, 2 to 3 inches of Wesson oil in there for, you wanted it to go a while, so you didn't want to use too much. And then you take the Poppin' Fresh dough, and you'd stick your finger through the biscuit as biscuit dough.
Right.
And if you wanted to get fancy, you get the layered croissant dough. You know, we really created cronuts before anybody else knew. Because we did it with crescent roll dough. And then you'd stick your finger in, or put a shot glass, because we had a shot glass, of course.
To make the donut hole.
Donut hole.
Okay.
And then you pop them in the grease, or the oil, and you'd fry them up. And then I was in charge of cooking, and then Adrian, my other roommate, was in charge of the, because he was really good at it, shaking cinnamon sugar in a bag. So he would put the donuts in the cinnamon sugar bag, shake them, and then we'd have them on the plate, and
That sound good.
Yeah.
Interestingly
all
enough.
All for $1.50.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right. Interestingly enough, I did read a recipe not too long ago for puff pastry donuts. Do the same thing with puff pastry and just use a cookie cutter and cut your donuts and poke a hole in it.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. And so that's kind of cronutty.
That's totally cronutty.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like it. You were asked, so what was my ingredient this week?
Yeah. But maybe we didn't have one.
Did we have one? You know what I've been using, which is, this is again, totally lowbrow. But I've been using like a good garlic salt with sea salt and just dried garlic.
Yeah.
And it's just sort of, I'm lazy. I have it right by my stove.
I know, but I started going back to that too. I still use fresh garlic, of course, in some things you have to have it. But boy, that garlic powder with sea salt is really, really good. I like it.
It's kind of killer.
Hey, do you know what day it is?
Yes, I do. Cause I made something for it.
Oh, okay. Well, Susan, do you know what day it is?
Barack Obama's birthday?
Is it?
Yes.
Oh, happy birthday, Barack.
And Louis Armstrong's birthday, too. But it's also...
two great Americans.
National Mustard Day.
And you know what else it is?
What?
National Chocolate Chip Cookie Day.
Wow.
Oh, man.
I better go to Ruby Brink and get a...
I've done my duty. I did get one.
I think I need you to introduce me to that.
Yeah, I think we need to do that pretty soon. Yeah, well, so it's National Mustard Day. There's even, I found out, a National Mustard Museum.
Are you a fan of mustard?
I love mustard. Yeah. I love any kind of mustard.
What's your favorite way to eat it? Do you have a favorite vehicle?
Well, ham and mustard. I love ham sandwiches. That's my favorite sandwich.
That is a good sandwich. Do you like pickles on it too?
On a ham sandwich? No.
Yeah. Oh.
No.
Interesting. No.
But I like mustard to dip French fries in.
So sorry.
It's good.
Where are you from? Did you grow up in an orphanage?
There are several versions of my history.
Oh my gosh.
So we'll talk about that another time.
Mustard and French
but
fries.
I do want to tell you some things about mustard.
Okay.
Are you ready to learn?
I'm totally ready to learn. Okay. I'm ready for me some edumacation.
So the Romans were probably the first ones, if you can believe it. They're always the first ones.
To figure it out.
To experiment with the preparation of mustard as a condiment, because prior to that, they'd used it for medicinal purposes.
And this is the same culture that basically would ferment fish as a condiment. So this was a big upgrade.
Right. But listen, their recipe was ground mustard, pepper, caraway, lavage, coriander seeds, dill, celery, thyme, oregano, onion, honey, vinegar, and fish sauce.
Oh, the fish sauce.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they likely exported it to Gaul in the 10th century, where the monks took it on.
Well, the Gaul of them.
Ba-dum-bump. Yeah. And then European use dates back to like 1292 in Paris. Of course, the Parisians, you know. And we know about Dijon, France.
Yes.
There's interesting history about Gray Poupon. Gray was a man, and so was Poupon. Gray was the guy who had the recipe, and Poupon was the banker.
Oh, that's so funny, because I used to think it was a variation of mustard, like it was a gray strain. I really did. I was like, it was like, it could be white Poupon or gold Poupon.
Well, that they established that in 1877.
Wow.
Yeah, imagine.
And the Germans make a mean mustard.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
They do. And a beer mustard. I like their beer mustard.
Mm.
England is attested from the year 1390 in the Book of Curry, which was written by King Richard II's master cook.
Why was it called Book of Curry?
I don't know. Well, mustard, you know, curry, turmeric. I don't know. My mustard that I made has turmeric in it.
Huh.
Anyway, they made mustard balls. And these were...
Say what? Mustard balls.
They were coarse ground mustard seed combined with flour and cinnamon. Uh-huh. And that's all.
Okay.
And then they rolled it into a ball and they let it dry. And that way they could store it. And then when they needed mustard, they would add liquid. Some vinegar or some wine or some beer or something like that. And they'd have mustard. So
that's pretty clever.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty clever. And then, you know, here's your favorite about French's mustard.
Uh-huh.
The use of mustard as a hot dog condiment is said to have first been seen in the U.S. in 1904 at the St. Louis World's Fair. And that was bright yellow French's mustard when it was introduced.
Dude, I wonder if they make it intentionally bright yellow or it just comes out that way or it just is.
I haven't ever read the ingredients.
I know.
It.
I have to do a little more mustard research.
It turns it really a nice color.
Yeah, it's the perfect thing to stain your shirt with.
Yeah, it really is. Do you know who Hank Shaw is? He's a like a chef, writer, hunter, gatherer.
He has a foraging blog.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's a gardener and a cook and a
yes.
angler. And anyway, I used his recipe for the mustard that I made.
Mm.
And I think we should taste some mustard.
Okay. Yep. So we made mustard, kids.
Yeah, we did make mustard.
We were talking about it. We decided to make some.
Is that mine or
that's
yours?
Mine.
That's yours. Where's
Here's
mine?
Yours.
Oh, there's yours. You taste that one.
Do I get a toothpick?
I'll take this one. Yeah, you can have a toothpick.
I could use my pen, I guess.
There you go. And no double dipping in COVID times. Okay.
I was not raised by wolves.
Okay. Well, that's not what you said.
I only do it with chips.
Okay, so yours is sweet and hot.
Like me? Sweet and hot, baby.
You know, like honey baked hams, that mustard that honey baked ham.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you know, gosh. I have a propensity to I like sweet things and not
That's
overly
why you like
sweet.
Me.
Exactly. That yours is really good too. Yours is more of is there tarragon in that?
No, there's just turmeric and water.
Wow. It's funny how both of ours, when you make a fresh mustard, I think it probably mellows maybe a week or two in, but it's hot. Well, it's like Chinese mustard.
It is hot like Chinese, but I think it mellows after a while. Mine's only been 24 hours, and yeah. They say you at least have to let it go 24 hours.
It has almost like a horseradish mm-hmm. aftertaste. It's mm-hmm. it's a gratifying mm-hmm. heat, but it's definitely waking up your taste
well,
buds.
Well, I have a mustard critic in my friend list, yeah? And her name is Karen Brewer. And she tasted my mustard and said it was delightful, but if I might want to lighten up on the chilies next time, because I did put chilies in it.
Oh yeah, I think you wouldn't even have to put chilies in, because mine was hot and there was no
chilies in it.
Yeah,
yeah.
So yours was, how was yours made again?
It was mustard seeds. Okay. I used yellow mustard. No, I used brown mustard seeds instead
no
of black.
Powder, but just seeds.
Yeah, no,
okay.
Both.
Okay.
So mustard seeds and mustard powder, mm-hmm. vinegar. And chilies mm-hmm. and water.
Were they like fresh chilies, like jalapeno?
Mm-hmm. Oh. They were. Hannah Green grew them.
Oh, God bless her.
I know.
She's amazing.
Well, Tyler grew them, actually, but mm-hmm. she gave me some, and she said, be careful. So I only put two in, but I thought,
yeah,
I probably should have put half in, mm-hmm. you know. But anyway, it's really good. And I think if anybody's interested, we'll post a couple mustard recipes
online. I'll send you mine.
It's really fun. Yeah, do.
Because mine is more... what's your recipe, Tom? Oh, well, Linda, it's guy.
I'm sorry.
You know, it's fine.
What is your recipe, Tom?
Oh, thank you. A little more earnest. mine is, it is powdered, and it's also powdered mustard and, the seeded mustard. Mm-hmm. And then I put an apple. I have this homemade apple.
Cider.
Homemade apple cider vinegar, which is yum. Delicious. And then a little bit of brown sugar. Mm-hmm. And a little bit of maple syrup and salt. And then you grind it up, and it was a little too hot. So then I put in just a little bit of sweet soy sauce, which is done in a lot of Malaysian cooking. Yeah. Cause I had it. It was kind of like I was going through going like, I got to,
it had to
fix
have something.
This. Yeah. And now I feel like it's fixed.
I think it's really good.
Yeah. I was happy with it.
It's right up there with honey baked hams.
You know,
I'll tell you.
I'm going to have to go get me a spiral cut, honey.
Yeah, get yourself a spiral cut and we'll have a Sammy.
That'd be great. Make biscuits.
We'll do that. Yeah, yeah.
We'll eat for days.
Well, America's the country in the whole world that uses the most mustard.
Is it true?
That's really true.
Whoa.
And mustard is really healthy. Did you
know really
that?
Surprises me.
Yellow mustard, American style, probably.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, that's probably what it is.
Yeah.
But did you know it's really healthy for you? Mustard is really healthy. It has selenium. It has omega-3, potassium, magnesium, calcium, anti-inflammatory properties.
Wow.
So, you know, maybe, I mean, I didn't know that.
I should check chocolate sauce. Just to see if it has similar healthy qualities. I could be
chocolate
missing out.
It probably does.
It's definitely good for you. It has antioxidants and...
And mood elevators.
And mood elevators, yes.
Yeah.
It's better than sex.
What is the sex you talk about? What is that?
What? Now, here's another little interesting thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Quiet down.
No.
French monks used it to treat wounds, while the Greeks used it to relieve muscles, sore muscles, mm-hmm. and cure toothaches. So, it's been around a long time, and it wasn't until... No.
Yeah, it's really crazy the ingredients that have been around for so long, and I always want to sort of know the geographical and historical references to the ingredients.
Right.
Like if there's turmeric, how the heck did they get turmeric? Because turmeric is it's a ginger root. It's mm-hmm. a tropical plant. Mm-hmm. So you're wondering, wow, how, you know, the trade must have been so amazingly extensive that more than you think about.
Huge.
I mean,
it's fascinating.
Yeah.
The whole spice trade and how all that worked. It's fascinating.
Yeah.
And it changed all of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
It really did. Speaking of things in the past.
Yes.
I found something interesting that we should talk about. I know you and I have already talked about it, but we're talking about easy as pie and a cakewalk.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When you say things just sort of off the top of your head without knowing where they came from.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And so I was wondering what is a cakewalk?
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? Well, I found out that it is racist in its derivations.
That's horrible.
Yeah. apparently back in plantation days, they had a cakewalk, and what the plantation owners did was they had their slaves dress up fancy for that night, and they danced.
As like a form of entertainment for
them?
It was
a form of entertainment for the plantation owners, and a cake was the prize for the people who danced. And really, I have to be careful, I don't want to offend anyone, but the slaves made fun of the plantation owners when they were dancing, but the plantation owners didn't know it.
So they would exaggerate the moves of the plantation owners in the dance. And
right,
that would...
and the plantation owners were thinking that, well, they weren't very good, but they did okay, uh-huh. You know? And really, they were being mocked, and they never knew.
The plantation owners
were
being mocked.
The plantation owners. So then, when whoever danced the fanciest or, you know, did the best,
uh-huh.
won the cake.
Oh, so then that part of the definition... comes the term take the cake,
or it's a piece of cake, uh-huh. or the cakewalk.
Wow.
It's not a nice thing. And
another, isn't that crazy? It's really crazy when you use something pretty much your whole life. It's in fact, when you had told me this earlier, a little bit about it, I swear I heard it two or three times on national news.
After that?
Weird. Yeah.
Isn't that funny?
It was.
It's like when you've never driven a Volkswagen before, and then you drive a Volkswagen, you buy a Volkswagen, and all of a sudden you see them all over. It's the same thing.
It is exactly I didn't know where you were going with that. A Volkswagen.
Are you gonna buy a new car?
I was going like, okay, I'm a little worried, Miss McCabe, where is she going with this one?
But here's more about cakewalks.
Yeah.
They were later incorporated into racist minstrel shows, which popularized usage of the word. Cakewalk could be an ornate dance, piece of cake similar to cakewalk. And what's amazing about the cakewalk is that it became so popular in America after the Civil War that white performers began doing their own versions of the cakewalk, typically in blackface, as part of minstrel shows. But an even weirder twist is that black performers also in blackface began performing their versions of a cakewalk for white audiences.
So somebody...
Terry Waldo, who's an historian, described it this way. He said, blacks imitating whites who were imitating blacks who were imitating whites.
Holy crap.
I know.
Wrap your head around that.
I know.
It's interesting. So what do you think, though, like, Linda, with you know, it's one of those things where I think nowadays when... you certainly want to do the right thing and say the right things that are...
You do.
Yeah, that aren't... harmful or hurtful when somebody says it now and they go like do you sit there and go, excuse me,
don't say that anymore?
Yeah, it's like, oh gosh, you know, this project is just a cakewalk.
Yeah.
You know, do you then go like, you know what the origin of that is? Or
I don't know.
Yeah, no,
do
I know
you?
You know, you could, you know, I think it's probably,
I think it would depend on the
audience
person.
Yeah,
how many, I mean, you wouldn't want to embarrass anybody in front of other people.
Yeah.
But at the same time, maybe we should just take out an advertisement. Do you know where the word...
Right, words, things you should quit saying.
Yes, stop. Well,
oh,
that's
a
really
good
idea.
Yeah, words you should quit saying. We could have like, that could be a...
Sayings and words you should quit saying. Because there's a lot.
There's a lot.
That we didn't know
and
about.
And there's some that are just plain annoying. They're not hurtful. They're just annoying.
They're just annoying.
Like obsessed.
Well, there's a lot of annoying.
I'm obsessed.
Oh, obsessed.
Everyone's obsessed with like, and you go, you know, you're not obsessed, you're just interested in it.
I'm really tired of amazing and awesome.
Awesome.
And amazing.
For sure. So,
I'm obsessed with amazing and awesome.
Tom.
Yeah. I interrupted. I'm sorry.
No, you didn't interrupt.
Okay, good.
No, I'm just wanting to know more about what you've been doing, and I know you've been doing tomatoes.
Oh, I have been doing tomatoes. And
the whole gardening thing, your gardening.
My gardening. Yeah. So, a little, can we go back to, Tommy's little childhood?
One more time. Just
okay,
one more
good.
Time.
Cause you know, I have never left it. as a child, we moved around a lot. My dad was in the Air Force. So, one of the things that was sort of very much like having a home or feeling like you were somewhere is my mom and dad would always make sure, cause I loved to garden even as a child, that I'd have like a little vegetable garden somewhere. Mm-hmm. So we'd always, and I'd be the one that would do it, you know. Yeah. They go, "Yeah, you can take, there's that square. Take it over." And I would always have tomatoes. And,
well,
and
how
so,
nice.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
So tomatoes, I've been, since probably 1964, I've been growing tomatoes. And my latest ones, I've been growing in the greenhouse. I have a greenhouse now because, mm-hmm. And I plant them into the ground, not in a pot or anything. But yeah. So what should we talk about? Like, well, what kind of tomatoes?
Yeah,
or?
What do you do? You know, there's some tomatoes. I don't know a lot about tomatoes except that I love big tomato sandwiches.
I like big butts and tomatoes.
And tomato sandwiches, yeah. But I don't know, like, what varieties are good for what things.
Yeah. So, and I'm talking about, we're in a zone 8. We're mm-hmm. in the Pacific Northwest. Mm-hmm. There are pretty much sort of little different, really sort of unofficial categories, but maybe they're official, with tomatoes. So that usually they tend to call things the big ones, the big honkers you put on a BLT or you put on a hamburger, the beefsteak type. Mm-hmm. You know, they're called slicers, and mm-hmm. they're usually like a half pound and over, and they're pretty big. When you grow those, you don't expect a lot of them. You just get, it takes a lot for that plant to.
Yeah, I bet.
So especially in our climate, you might get one or two per plant, three if it's in a really hot spot, three or four. And then there's another category, the salad tomato. So it's more the size of like a large ping pong ball, you know, it's like a lemon size.
Yeah.
And so those you have a little bit better luck here because they're smaller, they're still flavorful and wonderful, but the plant can produce more, you know, because mm-hmm. they're a smaller size.
What are you growing?
I grow them all.
Do you?
Yeah. My favorite. And then I also grow, cherry tomatoes, because those are great for salads too, and those are probably the most prolific.
So do you have little golden pear ones?
I do. I have those too, and then I have these ones called dancing Smurfs.
Really?
I do, and I planted them because they're sort of a blue red. And I know this is what you know. This is what you go with. Is I've been around this block long, and I've been walking this beat long enough to know that when you name something as ridiculous as dancing Smurfs, it's totally a novelty, and don't count on getting a lot of them.
Oh,
you know, but I'm sure I'll get some, and they'll be crazy blue and red. They're like an indigo blue.
They are.
Yeah.
How wonderful.
Yeah.
I wonder what they taste like. Have you ever tasted one?
No, but we'll bring one in when I finally get one.
Yeah.
But I grow, so the big ones I grow are one called Old German, which mm-hmm. is a gold and red, a purple Cherokee, which is a beautiful dark, almost brownish red, and one called Black Prince or Black Creme, which is those are really good. Gold Medal, that's a good slicer. And then for the little salad ones, I like Stupis is good.
My goodness, I just really had no idea.
Yeah. Oh, and if you're an islander, if you live on Vashon Island, a lot of people grow tomatoes or sell starts, but there's only one. She is the queen of tomato starts. It's Michelle Crawford at Pacific Pottager. And what's so great about Michelle is, I don't have time to tell you what's so great about Michelle, but in regard to tomato plants, mm-hmm. she grows true time and tested varieties for the island. So I always get them, like, I grow a lot of my own seeds and stuff, but there are people that I know do things better than I do. And she grows better tomato starts than I do.
She knows what she's doing.
She knows what she's doing.
She totally does.
And she has them out when you're supposed to, like when other people are having them out in February and it's snowing and she's going like, nah,
not too early.
I get them from her and they're just great. And she has them categorized. She tells you which ones, you know, probably do the best. So that's where I got all my tomato starts. Pacific Pottager.
Well, we'll have to have a tasting, a sampling.
Let's definitely do that.
Let's do that. So, do you can tomatoes?
You know, I used to can this one, another type called a grape tomato. Grape. Mm-hmm. They're really lovely. They're almost the exact size of a Thompson green grape, sort of elongated. And I would, and it was one of those sort of canning hacks, but it worked beautifully. And I wouldn't do a sauce and I wouldn't go to that much trouble with it. I tried that once. I thought, no, I'm not doing that. Because I found this easier for me and just as effective. I would take these little grape tomatoes and you stuff them to the very top of the jar.
Yeah.
And you'd put a tablespoon of lemon juice in it and I think a teaspoon of pickling salt.
Yeah.
And then you'd water bath them.
Mm-hmm.
And what would happen is they just sort of stay in there with their own juice.
No liquid.
No liquid. It was crazy. But there would be liquid because it would draw out the liquid. But yeah. And it was from some goofy, you know, Betty Crocker recipe. And it was a great way to do it. I loved them.
Yeah.
Because then you'd take them out and you could puree them. You could put them in salsa. You could do it in tomato sauce. Mm-hmm. You could then roast them and put them in a salad or a pasta dish.
Yeah.
Really
That's
good.
Really good. I love that idea. Yeah. Have you ever done tomatoes preserved in olive oil?
No.
I haven't either.
I've done dried, sun-dried tomatoes in olive oil.
Yeah.
Which is pretty great.
Yeah, they're really good. I like that too.
It just takes a lot of tomatoes to sun-dry and put in a, you know, it really is crazy. It's like four times the amount that go in the jar.
Yeah, but they're sure better than the ones you buy.
Yeah.
I mean, they really are.
And most people, I think when you get the ones in the store, they're a little too dried.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like they shouldn't crack a crown.
Yeah.
Well, they shouldn't.
Well, no, they shouldn't crack a crown.
They should not crack a crown. No,
man. Did that happen to you?
Practically. Oh, yeah. It was like, it was so chewy. I was trying to chew it and I had a cracked tooth in it.
And that was that.
$2,000 later. Yeah. It said, you should have that cracked tooth sooner.
Well, you know, I came across an article the other day in Food and Wine.
Oh, yeah.
It was a darling little
Do you keep magazines? Do you keep your, like, a lot of...
I do most of my stuff online now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I used to have, like, 5 years of food magazines.
Right.
All alphabetized and organized.
Me too.
Then I moved and I thought, really?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so.
Minor, I have Savour.
It hurt me.
That one.
To part with them.
Yeah.
I had Savour. Remember Cuisine? I had that one.
Yes.
And I had Bon Appetit.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's all
I had. They used to be so much better, too.
Oh, yeah. They were way better. But now it's all online, so that's what I do. The only magazine I really love as a magazine is The New Yorker and Vanity Fair.
Yeah.
You know, so. But well, anyway.
You're tight with Jennifer and Brad, so.
Well, you know.
I was supposed to talk about that.
Shh. So anyway, I found this darling article written by Anthony Giglio. I can't say his name. He's Italian.
That was pretty, though.
Giglio. It might be Giglio. I don't know. But anyway, he's a wonderful writer. I've read his work. And he tells us a story about making tomato sauce.
Oh, awesome.
That's really about eggplant.
Oh, this is great. Is it like a home story?
It's a home story. Yeah.
Oh, cool. I can't wait.
All right. So I'm going to tell you this story.
Okay.
Or I'm going to read to you. So he says, I hadn't been dating Antonia for more than a couple of weeks when she invited me to her parents' home for lunch. For the first time, we were moving pretty quickly, if you must know, because we had already dated exactly once 5 years earlier. Then we took a half a decade to break to figure things out. Still, I didn't know her parents at all. My mom's making eggplant, Antonia announced. It's the best. I waited a beat before answering. I was a cocky young journalist, restaurant critic, being paid to say way too much about the hard kitchen work and the creativity of others. I was accustomed to pretty lackluster eggplant in every direction where I grew up in northern New Jersey. I'll be the judge of that, I told her half jokingly. For a lot of people, eggplant is the polarizing cilantro of the vegetable world. You either love it or you hate it. I hated it. Unequivocally, my very large Italian-American family made eggplant parm in the saucy, gooey, cheesy style that's common in pizzerias and restaurants all over the Americas. This style, I've come to understand, is the outgrowth of the culinary game of telephone. Or whisper down the lane, where many of the wonderful recipes imported from Italy over a century ago somehow morphed through generations into this parm style. And he does not like it. Everything edible can't be parmed, he says. So, Antonia and her family are different. Her parents left the poverty of Sicily to come to the U.S. in the 1960s. Antonia's dad was a man of very few words. He giggled a lot and mumbled a lot, and he was one of the sweetest men I've ever met. He greeted me with a huge smile, and when he realized I was speaking to him in Italian, he said, "Bravo, Antonio, bravo." Antonio's mom, Lucia, was the Italian mother out of Central Casting. The short, teased, matronly hairdo, the apron shirt with metal snaps up the front protecting her house dress as she placed an insane number of antipasti on the table.
God bless her.
Her voice was so high, I imagined that if she lost her temper, the windows might rattle. I remember childhood aunts from Italy who spoke in this octave. It was oddly reassuring, even if she did sound like a macaw, chirping out orders to Antonia and her sister. So, what did Lucia's eggplant taste like? Antonia was right. It was the best eggplant I've ever tasted. Choosing adjectives to describe it is difficult because they're contradictory. It was both sweet and savory, rich and ethereally light, moist, but not at all watery. Silky, but not oily. Dang. It was less about mozzarella and more about the distinct sharpness of Parmigiano Reggiano. In other words, it was not parmed. The eggplant had been quickly pan-fried without egg or breadcrumbs, and between each layer of eggplant was her bright red, silky, chunky tomato sauce made without meat. It was exceptional. So when I asked her about her sauce, Vito laughed and quipped that I should come do the jars with them. So then he goes on and on about how they do the jars. And there's
Do the jars as canning.
And there's one little place I want to read to you here about how much they do.
It's so great food creates a memory. Like the memories yes. we have sometimes are so reinforced by food.
And he's talking about how there are sometimes 16 people in the house and they're all doing jars of tomatoes and they work for 8 or 10 hours a day. And then when they're done doing that, they go upstairs to the veranda and they sip something and they eat antipasta and they stay up late and they get up the next morning and do it again. And they make hundreds and hundreds of jars of tomato sauce.
Wow.
And so I have Antonia's recipe here. Not Antonia's, her mother, Lucia's. I have it. And I'll post it online if you want it. It's
Oh yeah, you have to.
It's pretty basic, you know. It's a grilled eggplant with summer marinara.
Yeah, no, it sounds delicious. And I think too, a lot of people don't give eggplant a chance. They you finish the T on the end of the last consonant, they go, "I don't really like eggplant."
Well, this is really basic. It's olive oil, tomato puree, 3.5 pounds of eggplant,
mm-hmm.
peeled and cut lengthwise, half cup of torn fresh basil, and
well, it's a perfect time
a little
of year
bit
for
of
that.
Mozzarella
perfect
and a
time.
Lot of Parmesan.
That sounds, yeah.
And that's it. It just sounds fresh and
there's
lovely.
There's no breadcrumb
there's
or
no
pan
breadcrumb.
Frying. Or
yeah. So, and I enjoyed the part in the article where he talked about how the recipes we get from our families morph into something. In this case, Parmesan, everything.
You were telling me like at the very, I think it was like, you're telling me, which I don't, unless I wasn't paying attention, you were telling me about like how it reminded him of something at the very end of the story. I was trying to. Did you?
No, I don't think so.
Did you? Okay.
I just thought it was been such, another story.
It was such a sweet ending about Lucia, I thought maybe. Could be.
No, it was about what her eggplant tasted
yeah,
like.
Yeah, okay.
That's what it was.
Hey, I got an eggplant recipe.
What is it?
Good thing I brought my computer. I have I have references for everything.
Oh, good.
Because, you know, God forbid, you're the only one with an eggplant recipe. I have an eggplant recipe.
Oh, good. I'm so glad.
No, and it's really timely. This is not something, you know, this actually is a perfect segue. You know, Linda, I had a really good eggplant dish this week.
You did?
I did. I was at a land trust socially distant fundraiser, and we were on the deck, and we were watching it, like, all apart on a the presentation on the computer,
mm-hmm.
and someone brought this really good eggplant dip, and I was like, "Whoa, what's this?" And she goes, "Oh, it's just my simple eggplant dip."
And did she tell you what was in it?
She did. I said, "Well, what is it?" She goes, "Oh, I'll send you the recipe." And of course, I'm not one to let it go because,
right.
like, I would just sort of give it 20 minutes. I go, don't forget to send me the eggplant recipe. And then when she'd leave, it's like, oh, it's nice to meet you. Nice to see you. Don't forget to send me the eggplant recipe. So here it is. And okay. This is what's great. Because if I saw this recipe, I go, I'm not making that. But let me once again say it was delicious.
Okay.
So they say it takes about 15 minutes to start and about 45 to finish. But you slice thin and broil eggplant. And so you have about a pound of that. So you just you cut it about a quarter. You can cut them in rounds. Mm-hmm. And then about a quarter of an inch thick, you brush egg olive oil on it. And then you broil them. And then when they're tender and cooked, you here it is. You stir it first before you put this all together. You stir in 4 tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil, 2 tablespoons of red wine vinegar. Mm. Oops, my computer just went blank. Hang on a sec, kids. Okay, a quarter cup of chopped mint.
Mint.
What? Yeah, but it's really good. It's crazy good. And then 2 tablespoons of small capers rinsed. And then you chop it all up.
It's kind of Persian sounding.
Sure sounds like it. Yeah. I'm almost like somebody was said, it's almost like eggplant caviar. But and that's what I think I'm going to call it, eggplant caviar. And I think I'm going to say caviar like that. Caviar.
like Grey Poupon.
And because I'm totally into making crackers now.
I know you are.
I've moved from sourdough crackers.
Oh, and yeah, I know you have. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I said it more than once. Why is she so mean to me today, Susan? No,
full moon.
We're just playing. Yeah. We're just playing. We love each other.
Well, you know, we talked a lot about tomatoes and it really was about eggplant.
Yeah, it was. It really was. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, tomatoes, there are a lot of things out there that they're just the best use of them, I think, is when it's fresh. And and summer tomatoes are certainly that thing. In fact, I was over at someone's house like years ago, and what they did was they basically just had this beautiful platter of tomatoes that were sliced and beautiful. It's just a sort of a kaleidoscope of motto love.
Yeah.
And they, instead of drizzling olive oil over it, they didn't do that. They had salt and cracked ground black pepper over it, but they drizzled melted ghee over it. Holy moly.
Holy moly. That sounds
baby
good.
Jesus, I saw him. It was so good.
It was a reverie.
And it was really, and I thought it was better than, it was, and it was so good. It was on a really good bread. It wasn't on bruschetta, which is good. But usually bruschetta is one of those things where you need to eat it out of the oven or otherwise it cuts your mouth.
It'll
and
kill your
it's like
lips.
A chew toy for a dog. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite, if you have to buy canned tomatoes or canned tomato sauce, do you have a favorite brand?
You know, I do, and it's so embarrassing.
Oh, tell.
You know, it's but I am backed up. I am backed up by America's Test Kitchen Consumers Consumer Reports, I think.
Okay.
Is the Hunt's that comes in a can. It's like ridiculously cheap. And I don't get all the junk in it. I just get the ones with sort of like tomato sauce.
Yeah.
No sausage, no basil, mushrooms, no, just the tomato sauce.
Yeah.
And it's really fresh tasting.
That's
and good.
The one I used
and it's
to.
Really remarkably inexpensive.
I've spent a lot of money buying exotic Italian tomato sauces and tomatoes and it really?
Yeah.
No.
No.
It's not necessary at all.
No.
Not at all.
No, and plus you know, we have backup with that. We have backup that our decision is fortified with experts.
Well, if the experts say it, then I'm going to write it down.
Exactly.
For sure.
I know. I always like it when they do those tests on America's Test Kitchen. And they're just so... It's between the audience and the presenters. And they're so... I don't know. It's just funny to watch.
Like, it is funny to watch.
So anyway, let's see. What have we covered? We missed anything?
I don't know. What are we talking about?
Oh,
today?
I know I was going to tell it. Because usually we talk about eating out.
Anywhere. We haven't talked about that. Well, I haven't done that much of that lately.
No, I usually am like a once or twice a week kind of guy, you know?
Oh, I'm not even
Because I'm trying
that
to
often.
Save some money.
Yeah, I'm trying to save some money, too.
It's nothing glamorous. I usually am like, you know, lunch takeout, you know? And, But I'm, you know, a huge fan of Zamorana's. Little street tacos.
They have tacos.
You get four of them.
You get pastor.
And they have carnitas or they have carne asada.
Mm-hmm.
And then for like a dollar extra, which is totally how you should do it, you get guacamole on top.
Oh, yeah.
It's really
good. So good.
So that's one of my favorite little side lunches. Yeah.
I love Mexican food. I like the enchiladas that they have over at Casa Bonita.
Oh, I think they have really good enchiladas. And I think their mole is pretty awesome.
I haven't had the mole. I'm always hesitant to try mole because...
You know, the only trouble with... the only trouble when I go to Casa Bonita is they will feed you as many chips ahead of your meal
as you want.
And I'm like, how many baskets have we gone through?
Yeah, but they also bring you the most giant platter
they do
of food.
Yeah,
it's huge,
and the margarita is ample. I think
it's very good.
It's good.
Yes, I do like that very much. And I don't know where else. I've just, you know, had sandwiches at Ruby Brink. They're doing well.
Oh, you know what I'm doing after this?
What?
I'm making pickles.
Oh, do you?
Yeah,
you're not the one who talked to me about the little tiny itty bitty watermelon pickles, are you?
Not a huge fan.
Not watermelon pickles.
No, no.
But those little tiny that look like watermelon, they're cucumbers?
Yes.
You're not a fan?
I'm not.
Oh, okay.
Because I don't think they're
Pray tell.
They're not a true cucumber.
What are they?
They're something. They're like Phyllis philomopus agachachasis or something.
They're not
a curbita or something.
I should have known that.
I don't know. Maybe they are. I'm just talking out my ear.
Yeah.
They're okay, but what happens is they're so small that you tend to get more of a spongy lozenger with them.
Oh, I don't want that.
Than a crispy.
Than a crunchy
and that could
pickle.
Just be my own skill of pickle making that made that happen. But I tried them once and I was like, that's another thing when I grow.
One.
You know who grow? They grow. Who grows them better than I do? I grow cucumbers and I go like, yeah, they're okay. But who grows great cucumbers?
Who?
Plum Forest Farm.
Oh,
and I don't even want to tell you that because I will.
Now
then
I'm
it's going to be like a demand on.
I know.
There's going to be a run. I had a hard time getting my cucumbers this year or last year. Last year I did. But Rob, God bless him, the farmer in chief.
Yeah.
He came through.
Yeah. They're
and
really good.
They're a nice little, they're about the size of like half a banana.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And like a dill pickle size.
Like a dill pickle size.
Mm-hmm. But you're making bread and butter pickles,
I'm
right?
making bread and butter, but I'm looking for a... I'm so mad I missed a mandolin at Granny's.
Oh, gee. I was going to loan you mine and I
know,
forgot.
Because I wanted to make like the lengthwise for the pickle.
Yeah.
So it'd be better for sandwiches. Like I have different varieties.
Yeah.
You can make relish out of this. You can make, you know, bread and butter.
Right.
But I basically use the same bread and butter recipe. It's a combo of Sharon Briskman's, who, if you know Sharon Briskman, she and her husband Barry come up to the island every summer.
I do know her.
And she makes some of the best pickles I've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
And so I asked her, Sharon,
for her recipe.
May I have your recipe?
How nice.
I didn't even have to bug her.
Yeah.
I think
that was good.
Yeah. And what's so great about Sharon is she's generous because it's a great recipe. Should I put that out on too? Should we put it out on our
web? Yeah, we can make a cookbook.
Are we writing any of this down? Okay. Well, remind us. But it's a really good recipe. It's basically bread and butter. And I there's a little bit of a marriage with it and the Southern recipe I like called Miss Irene's.
Mm.
Miss Irene's sweet pickles.
Lovely.
But it's a kind of a combo. It's delicious.
I find I'm already starting to think about autumn cooking. I really am. It's my favorite time to cook.
Yeah.
You know, everything's in season. Everything's all ripe and beautiful.
You know, isn't it?
September.
It's true.
It's just a luscious month.
It really is. And it really is. It's still summer, but it's a hybrid form of summer.
It is.
And in fact, what's sort of crazy about the Northwest to me is that in the summer here, I've been here for like forever now, probably what, 30, 40, 40 years, I think.
Yeah.
35. One of the things about the summer that I love and I hate, is I love the summer,
mm-hmm.
but I hate the fact that the Northwest summer is a real tease. Like I got up the other morning and it was that marine layer that just goes,
I love that.
I love it too, but it's going, don't get used to this too much longer because
we're
going to
scorch you this afternoon.
Exactly. And it's where it opens the door to what the weather can become, you know,
right?
Like you get little glimpses of fall coming in the middle of summer. And and it's sort of distressing at times. Like when you're in June and you're going, oh my God, that's, or you get that breeze that tells you, oh,
you know, there's that fragrance. There's something that happens on a day, and then I will recognize that I smell autumn. It just hits,
and
then it's almost gone.
And it has to do with blackberries too.
The blackberries,
the last of the. Speaking of which, do we have time to talk about blackberries
for a minute?
We've
got a couple minutes.
Okay, this is our public service announcement.
Okay,
get your butts out there and pick your blackberries because it's really short. You got about 2 weeks, and if you have rainstorms, you don't even have that. So,
but have you? Oh, sorry.
So you pick them. Here's my plan. This is what I do. I pick a quart a day. Maybe two quarts a day, one in the morning, one in the evening, takes no time at all.
Right.
Put them on a cookie sheet, freeze them like little marbles, Ziploc them, and then you got blackberry pies.
You got blackberry pies in February.
You've got sister.
Yeah, I know. And I think the blackberries are especially delicious and beautiful this year. Have you picked any yet?
I have.
Oh, man, they're good. Our wet spring, wet cold maybe, and now
and our moderate, our nice temperatures of 75 to 80 have kept them.
Yeah.
Kept them plump and
so
pretty.
So we all should. I'm going to be making blackberry syrup next week.
Ooh.
And I love blackberry syrup.
I'll make you pancakes if you bring it over.
You promised that last time.
And did I not? Didn't I follow through? In my little fantasy in my kitchen table, this what worries me is I remember having pancakes with you, but apparently that was one of Tommy's daydreams.
That was a daydream.
Oh, I need some supervision.
Well, we had blueberry
I live alone.
Cake, I think. So,
that's right. We didn't have pancakes. You brought it. Did I make it?
No, you made it.
Oh my God, I am worried.
Yeah, I'm worried about.
I'm going to start writing stuff down.
Yeah, you better because
I make good pancakes though.
Okay, well I'm Scott.
Should I make them with berries or just plain
berries?
Okay,
always berries.
Okay, so blackberry pancakes with
not blackberry,
blueberry.
Yeah,
but you're going to have blackberry syrup.
Oh, then you should make it without berries.
Okay, no berries.
Yeah, no berries, and then we'll have blackberry syrup.
Excellent. Hey, and you know what we forgot, but we'll just get to it next time?
What?
Is our question kitchen.
Oh, crumb.
I know. And you know, the problem is I had the kitchen question. I had the kitchen question that we got, but I don't have it with me.
Okay, well, whoever sent it, thank you.
I know, we were so excited. We got one. You know,
and we forgot.
It's a two-way street, kids.
But please email.
We are giving our all here.
Yeah.
We email, want a question.
Stirring the pot at voiceofvashon.org.
Right
and
on,
that
sister.
Will get an email to Tom and Linda. And we'd love to
on
hear from
KVSH,
you.
KVSH coming to you from the heart of Puget Sound.
At the edge of the Salish Sea. That's what I like.
And if you want to go live next month, you have to invite the engineer for pancakes.
Okay. You know, I think we should
We owe Susan an apology. We're acting like she's not even here.
I know.
And she is the wind beneath our wings.
I know. She can't.
No Susan, no show.
I know. I was afraid something happened and it was, I thought, oh my God, I can't do this by myself.
No, we can't.
But she rescued me.
We're technically inept.
Yeah, we are.
We had a hard time finding the right headphones today.
Well, this has been a rather discombobulated show, I think.
In a good way,
in a good way.
Say?
Yeah, just sort of scattering about and talking about all the wonderful things at the end of summer.
I
did too. And next month, I have to tell everybody, we have a special guest coming. Not coming, he's phoning. And his name is Gary Allen, and we're going to talk about sauces. He is a prolific food writer and historian. He's funny, and he has lots of ideas and things about kitchen hacks you can do for sauces.
Oh, that's awesome.
A lot of really fun stuff next month. So we're going to talk with him on the phone. It'll be our first phone interview.
Awesome.
I've never done that before.
Is that okay, Susan?
Mm-hmm. Won't happen without the engineer.
That's right. Well, who's going to be full on pancakes?
Well said. Yeah. Get her some pancakes. So, so that'll be fun.
Yeah.
And I
don't know much about sauces, so.
No, I don't.
I mean, I have like my three or four
like
main.
Yeah, exactly. Regular. But there's things you can do to bechamel to make it into something else. That's the whole thing about sauces.
You can build on them.
You can build on them and you can make them be something else. So our intrepid engineer is giving me the signal that we're out of time.
Aww.
Thank you all for listening. Tom, it was a pleasure to see you.
Always fun to see
Always fun to see you. And Miss Susan, thank you.
You're
and thank
best.
You to the audience. I hope you come back next month, first Tuesday of the month. Tom and I will be here and we'll pull your leg again.
Yeah.
All right.
For 2050.
Yeah, we will. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye.